Expat Files with John Mueller, Mondays and Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Progressive Radio Network. South
of the border. Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, not the version they give you in those glossy travel magazines or the picture they paint for you in those international traveler websites where they're only trying to sell you something. What's it really like for expats living in Latin America? Well, it's time to take off those rose-colored glasses and find out. So let's get started. Now, I'd like to talk about Belize for a moment. I do get the occasional email that asks, Johnny, why don't you talk about Belize? What's wrong with Belize? Why not Belize? Well, I don't know what you've all heard about Belize, but it is considered part of Latin America, even though it was colonized by the British, and everybody speaks English. Well, kind of English anyway, a kind of Belizean style of English. English Caribbean style, you know? And they do have so many slang words that sometimes I can't even understand them, and I've been there a bunch of times. And yes, they do speak Spanish too, which is really great because they're all bilingual then. But mostly between themselves, they speak a kind of Caribbean English. That is, unless you're in the parts of Belize that are on the border of Guatemala and Mexico. There, the Belizean people prefer to speak Spanish because every day there are a lot of movements of Guatemalan people into Belize along the border area to do business and commerce. Though there are not a lot of Belizean people moving back and forth across the border in the other direction to Guatemala and Mexico. And that's because the Latin people are very color conscious. There's such a streak of racism in the Latin population that some of these guys could make a southern bigot blush. I mean, there's such color and racial divisions among blacks and Hispanics down here that in a country like Belize that's more than 50% black, and as you get towards the Caribbean, more like 70 or 80% black, they rarely get out of their own country at all. They're just not a mobile population. And in fact, even along the border towns in Mexico and Guatemala, the black Belizeans are treated like second-class citizens. And the way it works out is that it's very easy for, let's say, a Guatemalan Latino to go across the border into Belize, do some kind of business, and come back in a day or two. For a Latino person like that, it typically takes about 3 minutes to go through the border check. They walk right into Belize without any hassles whatsoever. The same thing with Mexicans coming into Belize to do business from the north. It takes about 3 minutes for them, too, to go through a border check and get into Belize and do business or visit or whatever they're going to do. But it doesn't work the same way at all for a black Belizean who might want to go to Guatemala or Mexico. You just have to stand at the border and watch it yourself. And part of it has to do with racism, and the other part of it has to do with the fact that the Guatemalans and Belizeans are in a perpetual fight about borders and land disputes. And it's usually the Belizeans that get the short end of the stick on that, because Guatemalan military patrols along the Belizean border have a habit of going off half-cocked sometimes, and occasionally use strong-arm tactics to deal with the Belize natives. But that has nothing to do with visitors, first worlders, or tourists. So although because of these border wars, the locals might be beating each other up and holding each other hostage, it's nothing that expats have to worry about. So there you have it, a country like Belize with over half of the people being black. That is, being of African slave descendants or mixed African blood with Spanish, Creole, or local indigenous populations. Anyway, when you look around Belize, most of the people are very black, even the ones that have quite a bit of Latin blood in them. And you go into any big city in one of the neighboring countries like Guatemala or Mexico, and you could walk around all day and not see a single black person at all. Except if they're black first world tourists or playing on some kind of national sports team, like rugby or soccer. Because for some reason in sports, it doesn't matter what color your players are as long as your team wins. And down here in Latin America, only first world black tourists and black members of sports teams down here are treated like first class citizens. You got that? I hope you were listening. What I'm saying is, all throughout Latin America, they treat the local blacks much differently than they treat black first world visitors or local black sports heroes. In fact, in all my time down here, and with all the middle, upper, and lower class Latin families that I've known, I've never met a parent in one of those families who didn't say something negative about black people, Belizeans included. And in these Latino families, I've often heard the refrain that they wouldn't accept if their son or daughter were ever to hook up with a black person with romantic or marriage intentions. And that kind of anti-black prejudice amongst Latinos is present in the very top levels of society down to the most poor. And that's why, all along the Atlantic and Caribbean side of Latin America, all the way from the Gulf of Mexico down to the tip of South America on the Atlantic Ocean side, That's where you'll find, dotted up and down the coastline, little cities that are pockets of almost completely black populations that are always poorer and more isolated than any of the other cities inland which have mostly Latin American or Latino populations. And for those of you who haven't heard the word Latino too much, they use it down here quite often. It just means persons who have old world Spanish blood mixed with a bit of Indian blood. And of course, the Indians, or indigenous people down here, the pure-blooded ones, that is, the ones that make up a very big segment of the population in Guatemala, Bolivia, Peru, and Ecuador, those are the short brown people that have their own particular way of dressing. They often wear that colorful hand-woven stuff that comes from the Mayans and the Incas and the Aztec cultures. Anyway, they like to keep to themselves too, but not nearly as much as the blacks. In most Latin American countries, the black descendants of slaves don't tend to intermarry with the Latino population, with the big exception to that rule being the coastal areas of Brazil, where you'll see practically every possible kind of color combination. And as far as the indigenous populations, the Indians, they intermarry with Latinos all the time, but only in the very lower classes. Within the middle, upper middle, and upper classes, there's a lot of prejudice directed against the indigenous people, so you rarely see them intermarry, mostly because indigenous people are short, brown, and poor. And the Latin American idea of beauty, which of course they got from U.S. cable TV, is tall, light-skinned, thin, and wealthy. The fact is, the only time that an indigenous person ever makes it up the social ladder is if he's got a ton of money. But it's even worse for blacks down here. It doesn't matter if they have a ton of money, they still don't make it up the social ladder. And if they do, they're an exception to the rule. So if there's any of you first worlders up there who still think that the U.S. has a long way to go in regards to fighting racial prejudice and bigotry, you ain't seen nothing yet till you've been down here to Latin America. They're still about 50 years behind the times in the equal opportunity department. And that goes for gender bias and alternative lifestyles too. What these guys need is a Latin version of Martin Luther King, but that'll never happen. The political and social activist groups down here are just way too small, way too disorganized, and they just don't have any cash. So don't hold your breath. For example, look at Evo Morales, a man of the people, one of the first indigenous presidents Latin America ever had. Kind of Bolivia's version of Obama. And now that he's president and part of the system, he can't keep things together and his own people are revolting against him. In fact, they're rioting in the streets right now as I speak. Evo's police force is beating up on his own indigenous brothers, the ones that elected him. Because in this case, the indigenous population doesn't want the state to put a highway through their protected biosphere in the Amazon. Poor Evo's between a rock and a hard place. He's trying to be a socialist and a capitalist at the same time. And he's finding out that in his country, which consists mostly of indigenous people, that just doesn't work. It's kind of a schizophrenic mess when you're dealing with an uneducated indigenous population. They want progress, which brings jobs, but they don't want progress because they want to preserve their indigenous culture. And for all of you who've been watching the news lately and you've seen Bolivia's been popping up, you'll see that old Evo just might get lynched by his own brothers. Okay, but let me get back to my other point. Now, occasionally I do get emails asking me what it's like for a black person to live down here in Latin America. A first world black person expat, that is. They're wondering if a black expat has that same, what I always call, gringo advantage. I'm talking about that automatic 2 or 3 points that are added to your score just by the virtue that you are a first world person coming down to Latin America to live, work, play, or just visit. Because like I said before, Latin Americans love everything and anything that's first world. In fact, they all want to be just like us. And they want everything we have up in the first world, all the creature comforts. And that's why at all the U.S. embassies down here in Latin America, there's a constant line that's about a block or two long, just chock full of Latins with high hopes, thinking they're going to get a visa. And that's also the reason why every poor Latin who's been rejected for a U.S. visa has tried to get into the United States illegally. So the answer to that question is yes. If you are a black person coming down from the first world, you get those extra 2 or 3 points added to your score, just like the average white person coming down from the first world does. It works exactly the same for first world blacks. As long as you look, act, and carry yourself like the average American tourist or expat. I mean, if you come down here looking like Snoop Dogg, with gold teeth, a ton of chains around your neck, a couple of neck tattoos and a backwards cap, and peekaboo ass crack Bermuda shorts, you will not get that extra 3-point advantage. And the chances are the only Latins that are going to warm up to you are homeboy gangsters that got deported from LA. But if you look like the average clueless first world tourist or expat, the doors will fling wide open for you, just like they did for me. But I was talking about Belize, wasn't I? You know, a lot of First World people down here traveling around wonder why Belize, a former British colony where everyone speaks English, well, why do they all speak Spanish so well? Especially when they're so isolated and the people almost never get out of their own country to do any traveling or visiting. And by the way, they don't get around much because Belize is one of the absolute poorest countries in Latin America. And 90% of the population has about zero discretionary income to do anything like that. Anyway, the reason why black Belizeans speak Spanish so well is because sometime back in their ancient history, they were actually part of Guatemala. Or Guatemala claimed it as one of its territories. There was some kind of political machinations and the British sold at least part of it to Guatemala. And even though there's some dispute about how that happened, or if it even happened at all legally, it was for a time under Guatemalan control. And naturally, since Guatemala is a Spanish-speaking country, the Spanish language infiltrated fast. Then some years later, Belize declared its independence, so the result of being tossed back and forth between English and Spanish rule, that gave the country two languages, which is a very good thing for first world tourists and expats whose Spanish sucks. Now, when you're driving through Belize, you'll notice a couple of things. One is that it's awful flat. You won't see big mountain ranges and cloud forests like you do in the neighboring countries. And you'll also notice that it's very sparsely populated. It doesn't even have 350,000 people in the whole country. And you'll also notice that it's very economically depressed and that the housing is pretty dilapidated and weather-beaten. Mostly tin-roof Latin American ghetto style. The very same kind of depressing stuff you see in the poorest sections of the big cities down here in Latin America. But it's like that all over in Belize. Even in Belize City, the capital and the biggest city, where there once was a big, thriving British expat colony. And like every former British colony, they still have a cricket club and a couple of very good Indian restaurants. And I don't mean Indian, American Indian, I mean Indian as in India. And even in Belize City, you'll only find a small area, only a couple of dozen square blocks, where the houses look anything near first world at all. And of course, you always have a few rich people thrown in there, bankers and merchants and stuff. And they always have really big houses, what you might even call mansions. But even those look a little tattered around the edges. Most of them are just plain run down, no matter how much money a guy has or doesn't have. Now people ask me if I recommend Belize for expats. Well, of course, there are expats living down there, and I know quite a few. Well, I can tell you this, it's very hot and very rainy. And on the Belize mainland, in the cities, it's considered quite dangerous, especially at night. In fact, when staying in a hotel in Belize City, this happened to me more than once. I was warned by the person at the front desk not to walk around at night, which doesn't give you a very high opinion of the neighborhood, especially when it looks like you're in a nicer section of town where the hotels are a little higher priced, and it actually seems rather calm in the daytime. To me, the place just seems so poor and run down. It seems to me that even if an expat were to come down and stay on the mainland and start a business and build a nice house or buy or whatever, just walking around and looking at things in general is just kind of depressing, really. And it's nice once in a while to visit a place that's permanently stuck in first gear at 2 miles an hour, which almost all of Belize is. But you know, expat Eddie says it best. He says Belize, on the mainland that is like an old car that's been left out in the sun for too many years. No matter how many times you wash and wax it, it still looks like it's been left out in the sun too long. And no matter how much elbow grease you put into it, it's always going to look like it's ready for the junk heap. But I keep talking about the Belize mainland. Now, there is a section of Belize that you might even have heard of. That's that famous little string of islands on the barrier reef. It's the second largest barrier reef in the world and really famous with divers. And on those islands, which are in the waters close to Mexico, there are many pockets of gringo expats with first world developments and high-rise condos and all that. And with some very exquisite first world vacation homes. Now, those little islands are absolutely terrific, well-kept, and kind of like walking in a first world paradise. But those are all first world productions, so you're going to pay first world prices. In other words, a nice place to visit, but it's too expensive to live there. And if you have the kind of money it takes to live in one of those island developments, you probably already have a few vacation houses scattered around the world. And I think most of the expat wannabes listening to this program would like to get in on a ground floor or near ground floor opportunity where the gringos and the first worlders haven't really invaded yet. And I'm not saying that the islands of Belize have been invaded by gringos. No, there's no giant developments in big downtown business districts at all. But the gringos and the first worlders have landed. So land and property are expensive, and you're not going to get in on a shoestring if that's what you had in mind. It's not a place where you can do what expat Eddie did in El Salvador. And that is turn 2,000 bucks into 2 million in about 5 or 6 years. And the key to Eddie's success was not that he was so brilliant. He just happened to scout out some places where there weren't too many first world people at all. And he was able to spot some niches that he could fill, in his case in the restaurant business. Eddie saw that the locals were doing things in their usual half-assed, unsanitary way, and he just improved on it, gringo style. And Eddie, being a first-world guy, instantly saw that he could do some improvements first-world style and raise the standards at the same time. And that's just what the locals wanted, since Latins love everything and anything first world. And in this particular niche, Eddie was the one that gave it to him. So now, when Eddie talks, some people even pay attention. And that never happened when he lived up in the first world. Now, I've been talking about Latin Americans, the common Latin American, Latinos, and their prejudices against dark-skinned people, even though some of them are pretty dark themselves. Now, for all the years I lived up in the first world, I never once heard anybody talk about that. No one ever spoke about Latin people and their particular prejudices. I only heard about how prejudiced white people in the United States were about their own black citizens. And when I visited Europe, I heard the same thing. It didn't matter if I was in England, Germany, France, or Belgium. At a party, some guy or girl would come up to me eventually, usually a drunk college kid, and say, "You're an American, huh? Boy, it's a shame how you treat your black people. It's hard to believe you have such a powerful constitution and a Bill of Rights, and you still treat your black people like second-class citizens." You know, I took that guff from a lot of Europeans for a long time, and I really didn't have a good answer for them. But thankfully, I'm a little smarter now, and I say, hey, especially to British big mouths, you want to see racism? Go visit Latin America. Go visit your former colony of Belize and tell me about how blacks are treated like second-class citizens. Second-class would be a step up for them. It's more like third- or fourth-class citizens. And to prove that point, I'd like to use the example of San Jose, Costa Rica. Now, that's a city of about 500,000 people, and you could walk around all day and not see any Costa Rican black people. You'll see some dark-skinned Latinos, all right, but not black, as in Costa Ricans with a great deal of African blood. And in fact, 95% of the people who visit Costa Rica and go back to the first world don't even realize that Costa Rica has a black population. They think the whole country is just filled with Latinos. It's not, believe me. The only blacks that a first world tourist might see are obvious first world black tourists themselves, obviously dressed in their tourist garb and obviously first world in all respects. If you're down in Costa Rica, you just might see a few of those types. But not many, believe me. You could walk around all day long and see only three or four, or a half dozen if you're lucky. But you won't see black Costa Ricans. And you know what? A lot of people who visit Costa Rica have no idea at all that Costa Rica actually has a black population. And why wouldn't they? Since the Spanish landed 500 years ago, lots of slaves were imported into Costa Rica too. So where are the descendants? Well, if you know your geography, you can figure out where they might be. Costa Rica has a Pacific coast and a Caribbean coast. And on the Caribbean coast, there are small little port towns, and most of them have a majority black population. In one town in particular, called Limon, where three-quarters of the population is black, it's less than a two-hour drive from San Jose, the biggest city. And if you get into a conversation with one of the local black guys down there and ask him, how come there's so many blacks concentrated in this little town of Limon and almost none, only an hour and a half's drive away, in the capital and most lively town in Costa Rica, San Jose? And if you can get one of these black guys to talk, he'll tell you it's because there's so much prejudice against black people in the capital city that blacks from Limon weren't even freely permitted to visit the capital city of San Jose, Costa Rica until the late 1950s. And even after they lifted the law, the blacks were treated so badly by the authorities, they really didn't feel good about traveling to the big city. And the fact is, the blacks in Costa Rica are much, much poorer than the Latino population. So the cops in the big cities often single them out for abuse and consider them vagabonds and generally bad for tourism. And tourism, of course, is Costa Rica's number one source of income. One black guy in Limon, Costa Rica, told me that it's okay to go into the big city once in a while, if you're doing business and you're buying things or whatever. But these guys always seem to feel like a fish out of water, and they never get the respect that the average Latino local gets. And in fact, in San Jose, Costa Rica, you do see the occasional Costa Rican black in a disco or in a club playing music in the band. Whether it's salsa or reggae or Latin rock and roll, that and sports are about the only careers in Costa Rica where a black person can move up the social economic ladder in the big cities where there's mostly all Latinos. Now, this whole Latin American race business makes it very difficult on people living there who are dark, but not quite black. Now, it seems to me these guys always have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, trying to prove that they're whiter than they really are. Because like I said down here, the whiter you are, the more the doors are open for you. And many times I've been with dark-skinned Latin people, and I've heard them spout racist things against blacks, yet they're nearly as black as the people they're dissing. And it's funny, you should see how these guys go out of their way to explain in great detail their own supposedly pure Spanish origin, no matter how dark they are. I can't tell you how many times I've heard the same story from any number of dark Latinos that I've been sitting next to at a party. There's always some pure-blooded Spanish ancestor in his background somewhere that came off the boat from Madrid 150 years ago, and soon enough they make sure you know about it. In fact, one dark-skinned Latin guy I know, when you go into his house, as soon as you step into the living room, he's got a big old 100-year-old portrait of a very light-skinned Spanish guy mounted in a place of honor so everyone can see it when they walk in. And when a visitor like me asks about the guy in the portrait, my dark-skinned Latin friend gives me a complete genealogical lesson on how his blood is saturated with the DNA of this white-skinned Spanish guy. It just seems like dark-skinned Latins are always trying to prove that they're lighter than they are and that there's a direct line in their roots back to some old Spanish white aristocrat. But you'll never hear him talk about the relatives with the dark skin. And you'll never see photos in the house of the indigenous side of the family. That is, unless the family is truly 100% indigenous and proud of it. But for the people who call themselves Latinos, more often than not, when they have a brood of kids, you might just see a small spectrum of the rainbow. That is, you'll have one really light-skinned kid, one pretty dark-skinned kid, and the rest of them looking just a little bit tan and in the middle. Now, the darkest-skinned kid in the family, unless he or she is very handsome or beautiful, will have a kind of a tough row to hoe all their lives. Kind of like the toe-headed boy or the freckle-faced kid that occasionally shows up in a family of beautiful blondes. And dark Latino kids in Latin America, when they get old enough to hook up with a boyfriend or girlfriend, you'll notice that the dark-skinned kid always sets his sights on the person that's quite a few skin tones lighter than he or she is, even if that light-skinned person is on the unattractive side, which is often the case, because as you might imagine, dark-skinned folks in Latin America aren't considered very good catches, unless of course they're extremely attractive or they come from a rich and powerful family. And speaking of very attractive, dark-skinned people, if you're superficial enough to watch one of those Miss Universe pageants, and I admit I've watched a few, you'll notice that almost all of the Latin American countries have representatives who are light-skinned beauties, with only the occasional darker-skinned girl thrown in. And often, Latin American beauty queens are so light-skinned and even light-haired and gringo-looking that if you never visited Latin America, you'd think that down in Brazil, Venezuela, Argentina, Costa Rica, wherever, that there must be tons of young girls running around that look a lot like first-world girls, only more exotic and sexier. But you see, that's not really true. Those girls are not representative of the ladies in their country at all. Only about 1% of the girls in any of those Latin American countries have the light skin, are tall, and have the first world features that you see on exhibit in almost all of these Latin beauty queens. The fact is, only 1 in 1,000 girls down here looks like Shakira. And Shakira's light hair color? That's not her real color either. So even the beauty contests down here are a reflection of what the Latin people really find attractive based on their love of everything first world, including first world women. Even if those characteristics are as rare as hen's teeth within their own female population down here in Latin America. Now, my buddy expat Eddie has a girlfriend who's a runway model. She's a stunning dark-skinned beauty, and she's with Eddie because, well, Eddie's first world, and he got that automatic 3-point boost when he came down here, just by virtue of the fact that he's from the first world. Anyway, one night Eddie invited me to the Princess Hotel down in El Salvador, where there was a big elegant fashion show with free food and booze and all that, and since Eddie is never less than amusing, I went along. And I noticed among the 15 beautiful models that were on that runway show, Eddie's girlfriend was the only dark-skinned one. All the rest were very light-skinned, with a lot of fake blondes and redheads thrown in. Even the ones with the beautiful black straight hair were tall and had very white skin. And I said, you know, Eddie, your girlfriend's the only one that looks like she really came from El Salvador. The rest of them look like girls from Europe or the Mediterranean. And Eddie said, yeah, the modeling agencies down here are always looking for tall, light-skinned blondes, called rubias in Spanish, because that's what all the big companies like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Johnny Walker, and Jack Daniels want to use in their ads and commercials. They want the gringa stereotype. And my girlfriend, well, they always have to have one black-haired, dark-skinned girl on the team, called a morena in Spanish, you know, to connect with the men on the street. The morenos like her, the vast majority of the population that actually buys the Coca-Cola and the Cheetos corn chips. So she's the mascot for the common man down here. She's the odd man out, all right, but the modeling agency needs her. And you know what? There's an ungodly amount of dark-skinned, beautiful girls down here who, if they lived in Europe or in the United States, would be immediately snatched up as runway models, and certainly for photo shoots and TV commercials and all that. But down here in Latin America, no matter how beautiful these girls are, because they're dark-skinned, there are very limited opportunities in the beauty, fashion, and modeling world because they want girls that look like first world gringas. And if you don't believe me, just tune in to one of those terrible Mexican soap operas and notice that the popular girls and heroines all look like Shakira or light-skinned beauties with dark hair. And notice if there's any beautiful dark-skinned girls at all, morenas that is, they're almost always portrayed as maids, servants, or cleaning ladies. And I've talked to Eddie's girlfriend about this, that dark-skinned beauty. And she told me that even within her own extended family, she's one of the darker ones. And all her life, even in her own family, she's been standing in the back of the line. Just because she was darker than the rest of them. And when she was young, her little brothers and sisters, who were much lighter than her, used to poke fun at her, calling her negrita, from the word negro, which means black in Spanish. And there's no more insulting word to a morena, someone who's a little on the dark-skinned side, than to be called a pure black or a negrita. And now she's a runway model. But she still has a bit of an inferiority complex because in her modeling agency, she's the darkest of all and everybody's much lighter than she is. But there is one thing she did tell me in secret. She said, you know, it's a funny thing. When she's out on a job doing the runway thing or doing a photo shoot or an ad or a Coca-Cola poster or whatever, during that day out shooting, the Latin macho guys and executive business types were always trying to chat up the other models, the ones that look like gringas. And though they liked her well enough and did chat her up too, they never came onto her and propositioned her as much as they did the other ones. But when a photo shoot brought her in contact with first world gringos, more often than not, the foreigners would pay her a lot of attention and pretty much leave the other girls alone. It seems that the darker-skinned Latinas like her, the morenas, are a great fascination for first-world expats, gringos, and Europeans, probably because they don't much exist up in the first world. And though the other models that look like gringas were certainly beautiful and desirable, there are girls like that in every first-world town, so they're not exactly a rare item. And as far as that goes, the truth is, those black-haired, dark-skinned, exotic beauties, like Eddie's girlfriend, you almost never see up in Cleveland or your own hometown, unless they're on a Calvin Klein poster or something. And every time I see Eddie's girlfriend, I just keep thinking, Latin America is the best unkept secret in the world. Because all you have to do is look at her together with Eddie as a couple, and you'll know what I mean. It actually gives new definition to the phrase, life ain't fair. And though it may not be fair, if you're an expat in Latin America, it's certainly in your favor.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America. And don't forget you can email me on anything at all about Latin America. TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. That's TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
South of the border.